This is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Energy storage, like pumped hydropower, is seen by some as a critical step to reaching the state's ambitious climate goals. Pumped hydro is essentially a big gravity battery, one that tackles the problem of inconsistency in renewable energy. It consists of two reservoirs at different heights. On a windy day, excess electricity may be generated from wind turbines. With pumped storage, that extra electricity is used to draw water to the upper reservoir. Then, when there isn't as much wind, that water is released to the lower reservoir. Gravity pulls it down, spins turbines, and generates clean electricity. On Monday, a pumped storage project south of Goldendale, Washington, along the Columbia River, took a step towards realization, securing a water quality certification that's key for the project to progress. But the proposed site of the upper reservoir sits on Pushpum, a culturally significant place for the Yakima Nation, which holds treaty rights to access the area. B. Toasty Oster is a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, and they traveled to Pushpum to meet with members of the Yakima Nation as they work to protect the site. They wrote about the project for High Country News in an article titled, "Green Colonialism is Flooding the Pacific Northwest." Hi, Toasty. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Libby. Thanks for having me.
So the title of your story uses a term, green colonialism, and it's one that many listeners may not be familiar with. What is green colonialism?
It's just the idea that the shift to green energy is, in certain cases, playing out in colonialist patterns. So that might be the dispossession of tribal nations, the destruction of sacred sites, and it's happening in several different ways. You know, across the landscape, there's copper mines for, you know, copper for electric vehicles, you know, need lots of copper for their batteries. And some of these mines that are popping up to meet that demand are on sensitive tribal lands. So it's that kind of thing.
And we're talking specifically about this pumped storage facility that's planned for a site that indigenous people, the Yakima Nation, call Pushpum. Can you set the scene for us? Where is this place and what does it look like?
Yeah, Pushpum is a ridge out on the Sagebrush Steppe in eastern Washington, right on the edge of the Columbia. It's just a beautiful vista that looks out over the Columbia and over the steppe hills of Oregon. It's a wonderful living landscape. And when you go out there and go up to the edge of the ridge to overlook the river, there's a forceful current of wind that comes, you know, off of the river and off of the steppe because there are so few trees to break it up or anything. It has a real presence, a real feeling of power, you know. And of course, it literally is power. And that's why they've, you know, chosen that place to build so many wind turbines. And of course, it's right by the John Day Dam.
And what is its significance to the Yakima people?
Well, for one thing, it's a regenerative seed bank. So that's a first foods resource where they go to dig roots. I think a lot of non-natives don't quite make the connection that, because it doesn't sound super consequential to some non-native readers or listeners, but you've got to remember that like treaty fishing spots, treaty hunting spots, treaty root gathering spots, that's how native people are able to stop from becoming completely dependent on capitalism and completely assimilated into American life. It's one of the ways that native cultures are able to self-perpetuate. So the root gathering there is a really important component, but it's not the only one. There's a litany of environmental concerns there as well that the tribe raises as objections to development. But there are also cultural concerns, and that gets into kind of a difficult spot because the cultural concerns or ceremonial or spiritual concerns are not available to the public. They can't be made public, so the Yakima Nation can't go into detail about what those specifically are.
Yeah, and that's important to keep that information private, and we might go into more on the issues with that privacy and the ways that negotiations with regulatory bodies have become tangled with that. First off, the idea for pumped storage at Pushpum started back in 2008, and it had to do with this decommissioned aluminum smelting facility that sits there at the bottom of the ridge. Who are the players here? Who wanted to build a pumped storage facility, and how did the planning start?
You know, one of the interesting things that we found out, Libby, was that, and this didn't make it into the article, actually the first time that this place was ever scoped out for pumped hydro storage was in the late 60s. And that was by the Army Corps of Engineers. Then, of course, Lockheed Martin built a smelter there instead. And then, you know, after several decades of operation and pollution, the smelter went bankrupt. So when that happened, the landowner had, you know, this sort of polluted, you know, sort of a brownfield lot on his hands, and gave a presentation to a sort of assembly of state officials presenting this as sort of a prime spot for pumped hydro storage. But it actually wasn't his idea originally. He just sort of resurfaced the idea.
Oh, interesting. And so he's giving this presentation. How did the plans go forward from there? What are the steps that the owner of this land takes over the years up until the Yakima Nation learns about it in 2017? What are the next steps he takes?
Well, the county really responded, and they liked the idea so much that they tried to put it into practice. So, and this is Klickitat County. They worked with Scott Tillman, the landowner, to develop this pumped hydro storage idea, and they wanted the Klickitat County Public Utilities Department to build it and operate it. And they got partway through that process and it didn't quite make it through the federal permitting process. And so about that time, that was about 2017, I believe, this outside developer stepped in and was like, well, we can help. We've got funding. And that was Rye Energy, who's the developer, the project proponent now. And so they brought, you know, extra momentum and financing to the project. And yeah, all told, it was about 9 years of these various parties, primarily the county and the landowner, planning this thing. And the Yakima Nation only found out about it passively, because when you apply for a federal permit, that becomes public knowledge. And it was in the public announcement about their application that the Yakima Nation first heard that this was being proposed.
And the tribe is obviously frustrated by this. I mean, the tribe has rights to use this land because of treaties that they've signed with the U.S. government. How does a private energy project like this and native treaty rights interact here?
It's tricky. It's a tricky interaction. The entities that are bound by the treaties are the government entities, primarily the state and the United States government. So they're the ones who are under obligation to consult with the tribes. It can get a little confusing because sometimes, in some cases, a state or federal agency will ask the developer to quote unquote consult with a tribal nation. And so you might speak to the developer and the developer says, we have been consulting, you know, we've been talking to the tribes for years, we've been communicating with them. But from a tribal point of view and from a legal point of view, that's not the same thing as formal consultation. That's actually, you know, a developer can engage with a tribe, can certainly like communicate and relay technical information and things like that. But that's not formal government to government consultation, which can only happen between either a state and a tribe or the federal government and a tribe.
So the Yakima Nation tried negotiating about this project with a federal board. It's called the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. What happens with the tribe's communication with that board?
It's come to kind of a standstill. And the reason is FERC, like you said, it's a regulatory committee, but they view themselves as kind of this quasi-judicial entity, putting themselves kind of in the judge's seat, trying to sort of weigh the merits of the project proponents' arguments and the arguments of the opposing side. And so they've written this law for themselves that they cannot enter into ex parte communication with either party. similar to like a judge. What that means is that anything that one party says has to be made known to the other. And in FERC's case, they post all of the documentation from their hearings and their consultations on their website. If anybody, you know, wants to go navigate FERC's website, they can pull these documents up. So when a tribe like Yakima has confidential information that they can't allow to be circulated out into the public that way, they can't consult in that way. And FERC has basically held a pretty staunch position about this rule that they made up, that they consider themselves bound to it. And so they're not offering a way to consult that's culturally appropriate. They're only offering a method of consultation that would put tribal cultural properties in more danger.
What is the Yakima Nation's position at this point? Are they firmly against the project going forward? Are they pursuing legal avenues to try to stop it? What grounds are they pursuing to try to prevent this project from going forward?
Well, their stance is a hard no, and they've been very vocal about that. They have been very clear that once this site is developed, they're going to lose their tribal cultural properties permanently, and that there is no way to mitigate that. The developer has tried to, you know, offer all kinds of mitigation strategies, and none of them have satisfied the Yakima Nation. Now, the Yakima Nation is very clear as well that they're not against renewable energy. This is about this specific place, and it's about making sure that the shift to renewable energy is done in a way that doesn't repeat colonialism and manifest destiny. So it's not as though they're staunchly opposed to pumped hydro storage per se. They're trying to protect this land, and the legal tools available to them, you know, include trying to protect the root gathering spot, for example, because that is treaty protected. I was just rereading the Treaty of 1855, and it doesn't mention anywhere that I could see, it doesn't mention a right to gather for ceremonial or religious purposes, but it does specifically mention root gathering. So they're fighting hard for root gathering, and they're, you know, they're fighting hard for the environmental concerns, because those are more litigatable than the, you know, whatever ceremonial or cultural concerns that they might have.
And Toasty, you visited the site, this Pushpum site where the aluminum smelter with potential plans to become an energy storage facility sits. What did the developer say when you visited the site, especially about these arguments from the Yakima Nation about their objections to the development?
You know, he gave a lot of, you know, technical information about the, about pumped hydro storage and how it works and why it's so great. And it really is, you know, pretty fascinating technological, you know, idea. And it basically, it's two sites, actually. So the smelter is down on the riverbank, which is, if you're standing at the top of the bridge on Pushpum, is way down beneath you. And that's already developed. And in fact, that desperately needs to be cleaned up. So building there doesn't seem to be a problem for anyone. There would be one reservoir that would go there where the smelter used to be. The problem is that that reservoir would be connected by a tunnel up through the escarpment to an upper reservoir, which would be out in the other direction on more or less undeveloped land, which is Pushpum. That's where the root gathering happens and all of that. And that's that upper second 60-acre reservoir that's the problem for the Yakima Nation. So the developer showed us all of the different, you know, this is where this will go, this is where that will go, this is why it's so important to meet state climate goals and all of these things. And, you know, I asked him about tribal objections, and he used a lot of strategies that are familiar in sort of the colonial toolkit. He denied his power and his company's power. Mm-hmm. He said, we don't have the authority, or we don't have the power to like decide whether or not this is going to happen. There was also this kind of persistent tone of inevitability that like, look, this is going to happen one way or another. We've heard that in Native communities since Manifest Destiny.
Yeah, like it's just the inevitable march of history.
Yeah, and it places native people as the obstacle to progress, which is not, that's not the case.
I was really struck by your pointing out how many renewable energy projects, solar and wind particularly, are planned for areas of Yakima Nation ceded territory. Dozens of projects on lands that the Yakima Nation has treaty rights on. How does this project fit into this overall history of renewable energy projects ending up on Indigenous lands?
As far as I know, it's the only pumped hydro storage project that's being proposed right now, but it continues the sort of colonial pattern that we saw with dams like the Grand Coulee, and also when Celilo Falls was drowned, these sort of massive acts of colonization that changed the landscape and displaced native communities. That wound is very fresh. That in American years, that seems like a long time ago, but in Native years, that was yesterday. That's still very fresh. And so I think from a Native perspective, colonization is not a historical event that happened and is over. I can't speak for all Native people, of course, but for many Native people, it's an ongoing situation that, Native people live in. And this just kind of continues the story in the same old way. And that it, and again, it doesn't need to, we can have renewable energy and we can do it well if we do it together. I think that's the message that Yakima Nation is trying to get out. And instead, what's happening is the shift to renewables, including, the pumped hydro storage project at Goldendale, but also including the whole swath of the, like you mentioned, dozens of wind and solar projects are being pushed forward in this colonial way.
What's next for this project, this pumped hydro storage project? Is there any sign that the Yakima Nation may be able to exert some kind of voice here, or is it moving forward without them?
Well, it is moving forward. FERC just released their draft environmental impact statement and called for public comments. The Yakima Nation wrote over 70 pages of public comments because they haven't been able to consult. And when I say public comments, that I don't mean these aren't just off the cuff emotional reactions or something. These are written by tribal scientists, they're written by tribal lawyers. These are professional, like informed opinions and perspectives, and there's a lot of them, but FERC is moving forward anyways, as far as we can tell. The good news is that for Yakima, that they have managed to get the attention of a whole bunch of environmental groups, including Columbia Riverkeeper and EcoTrust, for example, who are standing with them against this proposed development. So it's getting press and it's getting people's attention, and people are certainly talking about it. And I think that's really helpful. Whether that's enough to stop the project, I'm not really sure.
But it seems like they're having to turn, the tribe is having to turn to public information campaigns and appealing to environmental organizations, things that are outside of the regular process of commenting and presenting a case to try to stop a development like this. I mean, there's nothing, it seems like, that's baked in the system to respect tribal rights.
That's exactly it. Yeah, you just nailed it, because there's no lever that they can pull to say, like, no, you've got to stop this. I mean, the way that the system is set up, it's set up so that tribes cannot have veto power.
Is there any larger lesson that you draw from your reporting on this about the future of renewable energy, specifically on lands that were formerly Indigenous held and have been ceded, but still have treaty rights involved and historic and cultural significance like Pushpum? Any broader lessons or indications of where these fights are going to go in the future because of what you've seen and reported on in this case?
Nobody takes care of the land better than the indigenous people. That's, I think more and more people are realizing that, more and more science is supporting that. we've already seen that 80% of the world's biodiversity is being protected by native people who are very much in the minority. And that's just one, you know, that statistic gets thrown around a lot. It's just one. The most biodiverse places on Earth are indigenous lands. It's just becoming clearer and clearer that supporting native sovereignty, funding tribes, empowering native communities, protecting tribal cultural properties, and protecting tribal sovereignty in general is not just a matter of human rights. It also gives us a practical legal path to surviving climate change. And, you know, that can totally happen. It's very possible. The problem is that certain people in power, government entities, and sometimes corporations, they don't want to go down that road.
Toasty Oster is a staff writer at High Country News, and they are a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Thank you very much, Toasty.
Thanks so much for having me.
We also reached out to Rye Development, which is managing the Pumped Hydro Project, and they sent the following statement. We recognize the Goldendale Project is located in an area that has historically been very important to many tribes. As we work through the process, we remain committed to working with tribal nations to address the protection of and long-term access to sites of importance to them, including for harvesting foods. We believe the project can play a critical role in supporting renewable energy across the Pacific Northwest while protecting the cultural heritage and local environment at the site. We also reached out to members of the Yakima Nation for comment, but we were unable to schedule an interview before this piece aired. Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m., Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.